All right, so you've taken some time and checked your heart rate training zones. What? Anybody want to offer up their zone one training?
126 through 146.
126 through 146, okay, cool, perfect. And that's going to be what percentages again?
0.65 and 0.75.
Good, 65% to 75% of what?
Max heart rate
or predicted max heart rate, okay? So since 220 minus age is just kind of like an estimate, we can never say that's exactly our max heart rate. But typically it's going to be around those numbers. The older you get, like when we're talking up 60, 70, 80, the 220 minus age doesn't quite work as much because I know some 70-year-olds that get their heart rate into the 160s. But according to this, it can't get higher than 150. So the older you get, the less accurate that the 220 minus age is.
Max is 150. Well, yeah, my max is
150. Yeah, or 159, right? Or 161, right?
Mine's 153.
220 minus age, so 220 minus your age is 59, right?
Yep.
So that'd be 161, which would be your max. Yeah, okay, good. And then 161, you add into the equation the 0.65, 0.75. What's your zone one?
For zone one, 104 to 120.
104 to 120. So basically, this is kind of assuming that someone around your age is in not that great a shape.
Right.
If I look at you, I'm saying like, you're like a healthy 30-year-old, healthy 40-year-old person. I'm going to put you more around the 110 to 130 range for zone one. Move that up a little bit just because I know that you're in good shape. If I had you exercise at 104 beats per minute, you'd be bored out of your mind.
Bored.
Yeah. Okay. But if you were in bad shape at your age, that would be a great starting point for sure. So what's the maximal or what's zone three? What do we get for zone three, anyone?
186.
186, is that just one number? Or is it a zone?
Oh, okay. The zone would be 168
to 186. Good. Anybody ever get their heart rate up in the 180s, 190s?
Okay.
Never 190s, okay. 180s, okay. Yeah, I've been able to get my heart rate into the 180s when I just absolutely max effort, sprint, push it as hard as I possibly can, sort of thing. What's that? It feels good after you start to recover, but in the middle, you're dying kind of in a way. Yeah.
Pure power and exertion. I'm too feeble for that.
Yeah.
I'm Benjamin.
I have seen heart rates go into the 190s, not too frequently, though. The highest I've ever been able to get my heart rate was 191. That was during a cycling test that I was just trying to break the machine, more or less. But typically it's difficult to get anyone's heart rate much above that 180, 190 range. But in zone three, you're working towards building a high-end work capacity, maybe for something like sprinting or like a 200 or 400 meter race, and really push that your heart rate to the max, push your exercise limits to the max. So we've figured out how to calculate our zone one, zone two, and zone three training levels. They go over things like heart rate reserve in here, and it's really not that important. Not too many people use the heart rate reserve method or Carvonin method, and they typically don't test you on it, or actually I know they don't test you on it on the NASM test, so you don't really need to focus on that too much, but it's adding in your resting heart rate, subtracted from your heart rate max. And then you do the desired intensity. So it's like, let's say my heart rate max was 180 because I'm 40 years old. I do that minus my resting heart rate. Let's say my resting heart rate was 60. Then I do all the percentages multiplied by 120. All the percentages multiplied by 120. And then on top of those percentages, then I'd add back my resting heart rate to determine the zone one, zone two, zone three. It's a little more confusing, as opposed to just doing 220 minus age. And to tell the truth, they're really, really similar. We're talking within four to five
what's
beats.
The point of going
like sitting in front of a client, adding or making, doing extra math is not going to build value any better. So, all right, next, we get to get into blood pressure, page 120. Blood pressure is the pressure of circulating blood against the walls of the blood vessel after the blood is ejaculated from the heart. Ejected, excuse me.
Stroke volume.
Stroke volume. Jesus. All right. So, we are looking at blood pressure on, page 120. What exactly is blood pressure? Okay, so it's circulating blood. What to do with the circulating blood?
The amount of pressure it takes to circulate through your body.
Bring in oxygen.
Not necessarily the amount of pressure it takes to move the blood or circulate the blood, but what's up with the pressure? So obviously blood pressure is the pressure of the blood. Okay, we know that. In what where do we measure blood pressure in? Not in the veins, actually.
Arteries.
You do it only in the arteries, yeah. Blood pressure in the veins is very, very low because there's not a lot of blood traveling. All the blood that travels back doesn't need a ton of pressure to get back to the heart. But it does need a ton of pressure to get to the extremities, we'll say. So when you measure someone's blood pressure, you're actually measuring the pressure on the arterial wall. And they try to estimate the blood pressure that coming out of the aorta, top left side of our body. We have our aorta that kind of runs up through here. And they're estimating, by doing it in your arm and by doing it in your wrist and doing it in all these other areas, you're estimating the pressure coming out of the left ventricle and moving into the aorta. Okay? And the pressure on that arterial wall is true blood pressure. If you were able to, actually go in and measure the pressure of the aorta or the pressure on the aortic wall from blood coming out of the left ventricle, that is would be your true blood pressure. But we typically estimate that by measuring it from the arm. Okay, what are the two readings of blood pressures?
Systolic
and diastolic.
Systolic and diastolic. Can anybody explain to me the difference between systolic and diastolic?
One is...
One's the top and one's the bottom.
Yes.
Exactly. One's the top and one's the bottom. Good, that's all you need to know. No. But blood pressure is typically read as systolic over diastolic, meaning there's going to be two numbers. Anybody know that the average blood pressure? 120 over 80. Good. Okay. So... there's two numbers in blood pressure. One's higher, one's lower. Why would one be higher and why would one be lower based off of two different readings?
One's going in, one's coming back.
One's going in, one's going out? Not quite.
Refers to the different parts of the heart.
Different parts of the heart? Not necessarily different parts of the heart.
System. Arterial system.
Not different parts of the arterial system.
I think it's when the blood is going through and it registers as that wave goes on.
Okay.
And then when that wave passes, the pressure, when it's not being...
Good. So how would you describe the wave? What happens at the heart when the wave hits or
contraction.
So the contraction of the heart, so the pressure in the system, pressure in your arterial system, when... the left ventricle contracts. Which blood pressure would that be?
Top 120.
Or?
Systolic.
Systolic blood pressure is the pressure in the arterial system during ventricular contraction. Or you can call that ventricular systole, too, if you want to get medically...
systole.
Yeah. Systole is the same thing as systolic, but it's just a weird different pronunciation. Yeah. Okay, so the pressure in the arterial system when the heart contracts or ventricles contract is going to be systolic blood pressure. Okay, so that means diastolic blood pressure is what?
The pressure
in the arterial system when
it's resting or filling back up.
The heart rate is resting or refilling.
or relaxed.
So when the heart is relaxed and it's not pumping any blood into the arterial system or the systemic system, you have less pressure. Okay? So, well, if the blood's not, if the heart's not beating, that means that the pressure is zero, right?
No. There's still,
because there's still like a hose. When you turn off the water, there's still water in that hose, right? And it needs to be continue moving. So there's still going to be pressure until that hose is completely empty. A little bit of an odd description because our blood never empties. But you can imagine that the pressure the blood is still moving when there's no contraction of the heart. Just it's moving slower and with less pressure against the arterial wall. So once again, systolic blood pressure is the pressure when the heart contracts, or when the left ventricle contracts, forcing blood into the arteries of the systemic system. The diastolic blood pressure is when the heart is relaxed, meaning there's no beating of the heart, and there's just the blood's cruising, I like to think. Okay. So we have normal blood pressure as 120 over 80, and we're pulling all of this from page 120 under blood pressure. Blood pressure is measured in an atmosphere, millimeters of mercury, mmHg. Hg is the elemental symbol for mercury. I think it's Latin for like hemoglobin or something. I don't know. It's like. It's Latin for something to do with, like, or the Latin name for mercury, I forget what it was, but Hg, millimeters of mercury. Millimeters of mercury is also used in what other...
Old heaters.
What's that?
Old heaters,
okay. So, yeah, not the heater, though, itself. Thermometer also reacts to... heat, so that the mercury goes up in thermometers based on the heat. What happens when heat rises in a closed environment? Anybody go back to your physics, or what was it, your...
Builds pressure.
It builds pressure, yeah. When heat goes up, pressure increases. Okay, when heat goes down, pressure decreases. Like our tires, it's a closed system. When it's really hot outside, our tires will actually inflate themselves because the pressure... due to the excitement of the atoms in there, literally expand and put more pressure on the tire wall. When you drive into really cold weather, the tire is going to actually slightly deflate because the pressure is lessened. Okay, so that's how thermometers work, which is mercury.
Hydrogyrum, what's the Latin name? Means quicksilver. That's what Hg.
What is it?
Hydrogyrum.
Hydrogyrum is the Latin name for mercury. Which is means literally translates directly to quicksilver. Yeah, and they I always remember they used to keep, before they had mirrors, they'd keep mercury, pools of mercury, at their bedside, and look at themselves and like to see how they look when they wake up and or before they leave the house. And actually, mercury is very reactive in the environment, so they would actually get mercury poisoning just from being around close to mercury, because it's so reactive to the environment.
It's a level of vanity that's extreme.
Like, yeah, it's extreme vanity. That's like, you're a badass. Like, I got a mercury mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I need to see what it looked like.
Yeah. So if 120 over 80 is measured in millimeters of mercury, that means it's measured in pressure. Okay? And someone created a system that when atmospheric pressure drops, then in this pressure system is measured in millimeters, obviously, and you fill up a little thermometer-like instrument with mercury, and based off when pressure increases or drops, it will go up or go down. So that's how you measure millimeters of mercury. This is also how they measure atmospheric pressure. When you get, I know this because when storms are generated, we typically have a low pressure system next to a high pressure system that then creates this interaction of and wind generation. And more or less, a low pressure system has about 930-ish millimeters of mercury. The atmospheric pressure is 930. That's a low, and then a high pressure system is all the way up to 1,080. So you have these two different, we'll say, systems next to each other that then react and create all of this wind, and that's how waves are generated, more or less. So people can see these two, like, if you have a super big low next to a super large high, you get massive wind conditions, and then massive waves are typically produced. And that's how they do all the forecasting for surfing, we'll say. But with if normal blood pressure is 120 over 80, what would high pressure or high blood pressure be? Anybody know?
Anything above
120?
No, because there's a range of normal blood pressure. High blood pressure is anything over 140 over 90. High blood pressure is considered to be anything 140 over 90 or above, yeah. Meaning, if someone comes in and you measure their blood pressure at 142 over 92, should they exercise that day? So you're assessing them, this is the first time you've met them, and they have high blood pressure. Unless they immediately have a doctor's note saying this person has high blood pressure, it's okay for them to work out, you shouldn't work out with them that day. Okay? To tell the truth, is 140 over 90 really high? No. That's borderline, just barely above what is normal blood pressure. So you can work out with someone 140 over 90 with pretty much zero risk, very low risk of actually having something bad happen. But when you get in the 160 over 100 ranges, that's where you're running into, okay, let's not even touch this person, get out of my sight. I don't want to train you. 160 over 100 is like, okay, you have some issues going on.
You're already in zone 2 and you haven't started moving.
you're in zone 2 and you haven't started moving. Basically, they're extremely out of shape, or their blood pressure is extremely high due to stress, due to being out of shape, due to being obese, whatever it may be. So 140 over 90 is the cutoff for high blood pressure. That's an ASIM test question typically. They might even ask, what's normal blood pressure? 120 over 80. So it's important to know those numbers. Like I said, if it's 140 over 90, I measure them right on that borderline. Guess what I'm going to do that day?
Work out.
I'm going to write 138 over 88 and say that they don't have high blood pressure. Unless this person's like so out of shape and they look like they can't handle anything, then I might say, okay, like you might have something wrong, like go to it. But I've had a guy that was literally just completely normal dude, in relatively decent shape, just stressed from his job. He came in 142 over 95, I think it was, and I was like, hey, you have high blood pressure, like I don't think we should do much exercise today. He's like, oh no, watch this. And he's like, hey, just give me a second. Took a few deep breaths. I retake his blood pressure, it was 125 over 80. He was able to just calm himself and reduce his blood pressure just by breathing a little bit. And he says he has like the ability to control his blood pressure a bit, but he's really stressed all the time at work, so it typically runs high right after he gets out of the office, but he can calm it down. So I worked out with him that day. Because did I write down the 140 over 90 or did I write down the 185 over 20?
185 over 20.
If you write 140 over 90 and then work them out that day and something happens, negligence.
What if you'd wrote down the smaller number and something happened anyway?
Then according to everything that I knew, based off of my professional opinion, he was okay to work out.
But can you sleep that night?
I don't know, is Miguel sleeping from the guy that died the other day,
like
got hit by the car?
Like a baby.
Okay, well, now talking about something happening with high blood pressure, what are you at risk for if your blood pressure is high? So you have extra pressure building up in your arteries. What happens in a system that is a closed system and the pressure builds up too much? What?
Heart attack.
Not heart attack. No, not necessarily.
Stroke.
What's up?
Stroke.
Not stroke either, actually. With high blood pressure, you're focusing on, so you can imagine you have a water balloon. You fill up the water balloon too much. What happens?
It explodes.
It explodes.
Heart can explode.
Okay. So, what you're looking, what you need to be careful of when you have someone with high blood pressure is, well, when you exercise, everyone's blood pressure increases, okay? It's completely normal for when someone's going doing very intense exercise for their blood pressure to go up to 220 over 110 during extremely high intensity exercise, okay? But imagine you take someone with high blood pressure and then exercise them to very hard intensity. They're talking 250 over 150 or something crazy to where their blood pressure is just so high that it could lead to a burst in an artery, okay? Or something called an aneurysm. Anybody ever heard of an aneurysm? An aneurysm is a ballooning of the arterial wall, not necessarily a pop in the blood vessel, in the artery, but it's a ballooning of the arterial wall that could put them at risk for something called a hemorrhage. Okay? The Loch Ness Monster's back.
It's a hemorrhage.
It's a hemorrhage. Oh, what's a hemorrhage?
Yeah.
So
aneurysm's the one that, like, kills you instantly? Like,
aneurysm is not one the one that kills you instantly. It's the bursting of an aneurysm that kills you instantly in the brain.
Okay.
An aneurysm is obviously in the with a coronary artery, too. The aneurysm is a bad thing, obviously, but the thing that's bad about aneurysm is that it's a thin arterial wall that could pop at any moment. If you get an aneurysm in the brain, that part of the brain no longer gets oxygen and you can pass out and die. Or that part of the brain can die, causing, depending on what part of the brain it was and how much blood flow that artery brought to which parts of the brain, you could lose functioning of the heart if it controlled that area. You could literally pool up with blood in the brain and cause other... Yeah, it's not good. Okay? So, to tell the truth, high blood pressure is one of the more serious things that we have to consider when working with our clients. Because that's something that we can actually, you know, could be directly our fault if they have an aneurysm or hemorrhage when they're exercising with us. Because we push them beyond where they should have been with a high blood... Or because they had high blood... And they had high blood pressure. We pushed them beyond where they should have safely been. Okay, this is why when you have high blood pressure, you typically don't lay down when you exercise, right? Prone or supine exercises are supposed to be a no-no, for those of you that took my special populations module. Okay, when you lay down, what happens to blood pressure?
Increases.
It increases. Why does it increase?
Work against gravity.
Because it doesn't need to work against gravity. When we stand upright, our heart works hard to force blood to our brain, okay? But as soon as we lie down, does the heart need to work as hard to pump blood to the brain? No, okay? But it still does for an acute 10 to 20 seconds. It still thinks it needs to go against gravity. So it pumps hard, and you actually, that sort of thing. And let's say you lie down for a while and then get up really quick, and the heart's used to the pressure needed while you're lying flat, what happens?
Do you get lightheaded?
You get lightheaded. You get dizzy. You might even pass out if you do it.
I do that kneeling down and I just get up real fast and I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah.
No,
if you're kneeling down or bending over, your heart doesn't need to work as hard to get blood to your brain. And you kind of put pressure here and then all of a sudden you stand up really quick and whoa, you get all starry-eyed lightheaded because blood is not getting to your brain as easily. So blood pressure is important to do the assessment, blood pressure assessment, with your clients during the assessment process. The main reason you do it is to check to make sure they don't have high blood pressure. Because if they do, they need a medical doctor release before they can exercise with you. But we already knew that because of the PARQ, right? Because on the PARQ, have you ever been diagnosed with high blood pressure? Yes. Oh. Do you still have high blood pressure? Yes. Go to a doctor, get a doctor's note. But let's say they say no on the PARQ, and then you do their blood pressure assessment, and they have high blood pressure. Can you work out with them that day?
No.
No. Unless you write something under 140 over 90. That just, if they really want to work out, you got to protect your ass. Obviously, ethicalness, you want to make sure that if they have high blood pressure, you send them to a doctor to come back. To make sure they have doctor's approval to exercise, because then that covers your ass again.
That's one of those things that you feel comfortable enough that if you can gauge off their physical appearance and off the rest of the stuff that you've gotten to the PARQ, that if you feel comfortable with that, then
Yeah, if you think they're in decent enough shape not to die, which is pretty much everyone, I mean, the likelihood of somebody actually having an aneurysm is so slim, even if they have high blood pressure, it's so slim, and especially in the moment that they're training with you. I mean, it'd probably be like a 70-year-old person that's had a high blood pressure for 20 years, 30 years, and they have all these other issues going on, and then, you know, they have high blood pressure, and you put them through an exercise intensity that's just a little above where they should be. That person might have a higher risk for having an aneurysm or burst of blood vessel. But normal people, you 35, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds that have moderately high blood pressure, the likelihood of them actually having an aneurysm is so slim, it's non-existent almost. 0.001 or something, if that. One in a million sort of thing. But if you're dealing with special populations, older crowds, I mean, just cover your ass. If they have high blood pressure, ask them to get a doctor's note before they can work with you. All right, so now looking at the blood pressure cuff. You guys will have blood pressure cuffs when you get into the field if you work at any gym. If you plan to work privately, it would be good to invest in blood pressure cuffs. It's not that expensive. But just in case you do plan on working with clients that are a little bit older, 50s and above, 45 and above, that might be out of shape, or even just really obese people, it would be good to have some sort of way to monitor blood pressure. You can manually monitor blood pressure, which is what we're going to learn right now, or you can use just a machine that just you stick the arm in and it does it for you, or a little wrist one. My grandma has a wrist one for $50. You could buy a wrist blood pressure reading, just stick it on someone, make sure they don't have high blood pressure. I always used to play with it, check my blood pressure like 80 times. Oh, so fun, yeah. Did your doctor give it to you?
No, I think I bought it for my own reason.
Oh,
okay. Yeah,
cool.
I don't use it, but yeah.
Balls up. Bring it in.
Yeah, okay.
Play with it.
Yeah, I
want to check my blood pressure. Yeah. No, but we're going to learn to check our blood pressure right now, actually. So when looking at your blood pressure cuff, and you can kind of see this also at the bottom of page 120, the proper sphygmomanometer placement and everything. The dial right here is going to be where you're going to measure that or get the reading. The dial, you can see that in the picture as well. Dial has readings. These are all millimeters of mercury readings. Okay, and what you're going to do is you're going to pump air into the cuff after putting the cuff on the person. If you have huge biceps like me, it might not fit. But, you know, you got to get the triple X size.
It's always a good feeling when you're the
yeah.
doctor and they're like, oh, we need to get the bigger cuff. Like,
get the bigger cuff, yeah. You know,
yeah, you do.
thanks, nurse, for noticing my gains. So once you place the cuff around the person's arm, in which the sphygmomanometer, which is the listening device right here, is located on near their brachial artery. Brachial artery is going to be on the medial side of your bicep muscle, just kind of underneath. Right through there, and you could hear this artery anywhere around this region right here. You're going to fill up this pump by squeezing this little tube thing. Okay, you're going to go all the way up to 220, and then slowly let air out at about 2 millimeters of mercury per second. Down. Yeah, slowly let it down. You hear a little air escaping, and you're watching the dial. As it goes down at 2 millimeters of mercury per second. As it goes down, you're gonna hear two sounds. Well, there's two points at which you're looking for. The first heartbeat that you hear is going to be their systolic measurement reading. So as it's going down from 220, you're listening, and let's say it gets right around 125, and all of a sudden you hear this squish, like a little squish sound. That squish sound is going to be the first heart rate that you hear, and you would mark down 125. But you wouldn't mark it down yet because you want to listen for the diastolic first. So then you're going to hear at 125 the first heartbeat. Then as it keeps going down, the heartbeats get louder and louder and louder and louder. And then about halfway in between systolic and diastolic readings, it'll be its loudest, and it'll be really easy to hear. And then all of a sudden, it'll start to fade away. The sound will start to fade away, and the last heartbeat you hear, whatever reading that dial is at, is going to be your diastolic pressure. So there's two sounds. The first heartbeat that you hear is systolic. The last heartbeat you hear is diastolic. Okay, so we're going to practice this. The sounds that you're hearing is the disturbance of blood, like kind of like if you put a clog in a river and the river like swirled and swished to try to get around that river, you're blocking the river of blood in that artery at anything above the systolic pressure, because it's not letting anything through. Your arm might actually get a little tingly below as you go through this. And the first sound you hear is going to be a disturbance of like blood trying to get through that artery, but it can just barely squeeze through, so it's like this squishing sort of sound. Okay. So, any questions on this before we get started?
So you put it right here, the little...
Yeah, so the flat part of the sphygmometer. The sphygmometer is the listening device that goes in your ears. It's also... Some blood pressure cuffs have that attached, like these do. Some have it separate, the sphygmometer and the blood pressure cuff. And this is going to go right on the... just near the brachial artery on the medial side of your bicep.
And the way to turn it on.
All right, so let's go over it.